Talking college football on the 13th of February, 2012, and Dennis Dodd is our college football Valentine. We're not doing a show tomorrow, so today might as well be our Valentine's Day show. Dennis Dodd's here. We got a Doddcast, Adam Azer, J. Darren Darst, and, of course, Mr. Dodd. Dennis, how do you keep yourself busy in the off season when just nothing is going on in college football, right?
Oh, my goodness. Are you kidding me? Nothing's going on. We're about to change the postseason look of football as we know it. We've got a new conference today for this week.
Everything is going on.
I ain't birthing no babies, but we are birthing a new conference.
So. It never stops. So we'll talk about this new conference. Conference USA in the Mountain West will dissolve and then reform as one. Darcy, you excited for this?
I was trying to figure out, I mean, how many teams are going to be in this conference? I mean, it's got to, I mean, I'm trying to think who's gone and who's coming back and
Southern
everything.
Southern Miss, Marshall, East Carolina, UAB, Tulsa, Rice, UTEP, and Tulane. Wyoming, that's Conference USA. Wyoming, Air Force, Colorado State, UNLV, New Mexico, Fresno State, Nevada, Hawaii, from the Mountain West. Then there's Temple, which is a possibility as well.
Well, that was 16 teams already, not including Temple. So if you give Temple, now you got a 17. Now you got a little bit of a problem.
Hawaii would be a football-only member. So that would be 16 football schools, 15 all sports schools.
All right, 16 football schools. We're talking four divisions of four, right, Dennis?
Dennis, what do you think happens here?
Well, this has been done already. It was done in 1998-99, I think, with the old WAC. And your line about four divisions of four actually made a lot of sense because back then it was so big that they had four scheduling pods of four. And I suspect they might do something like that for this. I mean, they're saying in the release it could be upwards of 18 to 24 universities. I'm sure that includes if they somehow fold in the WAC, which is looking like it's, you know, barely on life support now as it is. But, look, apart, these leagues couldn't do anything in terms of earning power or interest. At least now they provide some inventory to one central rights holder, whoever that may be, and they'll obviously go out for bid. NBC is a new player now. They've got money. They need content. So, you know, in many ways, it makes a lot of sense. It may take you 15 years to play everybody in the league, but that's besides the point.
The Sun Belt is getting left out of all this expansion talk. They need to get on the phone with the MAC and create an East-West conference, all the MAC schools and all the Sun Belt schools, and form their super conference.
Yeah, North-South. That'd be perfect.
Who would bid on those TV rights? Who would bid on those TV rights? The Home Shopping Network?
No, ESPN. ESPN just bid on the TV rights, $100 million over 3 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wednesday night football.
Is this the start of anything? Are there any implications from this, or is this just going to be one big conference that the general public doesn't care all that much about?
Pretty much, you know, it is survival. It's what Memphis was to the Big East last week. It's a live body. That can fill out, you know, a roster, and whatever they name it, they're going to name it. And I'm sure we're all clamoring for big country T-shirts or whatever they name the league. In fact, Darce, why don't you do that right now?
Start a
blog or a contest. Seriously, name the league.
The league. Let's get it going. We'll get it on that site.
Man, you take one from so many people now.
And then whatever wins, you copyright. And there's more revenue for the company.
I'm gonna go reserve the URL right now. I'm gonna register some URLs.
Darcy, he just takes orders from so many people. Now Dennis Dodd's giving you assignments.
Everybody tells me what to do.
As long as I get a cut.
Hey, we haven't spoken since Memphis joined the Big East. What do you think about that?
Well, like I said, I think from Memphis's standpoint, it was long overdue and long coming. But it's just the body to fill out the roster. I mean, this is not the Big East that Memphis was dreaming of joining 10 years ago, and this kind of became a discussion point. It's, you know, 7 of the 11 teams that will start in, 2014 are from the Conference USA. I mean, it looks more like Conference USA now than the Big East. And it's got enough teams to play. And with the dissolution, it looks like, of automatic qualifying leagues, you've got to question what a school like Boise has done here. I mean, are they better off in this new league that we just talked about, or in the Big East? Neither of them have an automatic qualifier. And Boise State's going to spend a heck of a lot more on gas. I know that.
Yeah.
Getting from going to the West Coast to the East Coast. So, but they didn't know that 6 months ago, so they had to do something. And well, so they went here.
Time to pull a TCU and get out and go somewhere else.
And abandon ship. Now, the playoff situation, are we moving closer to that? Tell us about the meetings that are coming up, and then we'll talk about the Big Ten supporting a 4-team playoff. Dennis, what's going on there?
Well, it just seems everybody's kind of resigned to the fact that it's going to come. And you're right, the next round of BCS meetings are next Tuesday and Wednesday in Dallas. Now, nothing final is going to come out of those. But, you know, there will be further discussions. They had, oh, what was it, 50 or 60 models proposed in New Orleans the day after the championship game when they first started talking about this in earnest. And now I think they're going to pare some of those down. The whole world wants to know about a plus one, and it looks like it's going to happen. You know, you saw John Swofford, the ACC commissioner, come out and talk about it last week. Obviously, Jim Delaney and his on-campus model. But there's so many barriers to get over, even to get to that stage, because I was just talking to somebody in that industry, in that consultant industry. You know, if you do play in December, a semifinals in December, you really are running into exams. And, you know, I think all the major conferences, all the BCS conferences are holding exams in December. You know, that's obviously 4 teams. But that's going to be quite a hurdle to get over, especially with the with some of the, you know, the scandals that have gone on in the last year. You know, can you play them? Can you play those games before Christmas? Those two semifinals. The networks desperately want that because it's more advertising to sell content before Christmas.
Yeah, but why do we have to do that? I mean, if finals is such a problem, we're only talking about one extra game, right? Why can't they?
We're talking about three extra games, and ideally, you'd like to have 2 weeks between the semifinals and the finals, if for no other reason, if it is in the bowls, then that gives those fans a chance to travel, you know, not knowing if their team is going to be there or not. So you would like to get the whole thing done by January 1st, because I think one of the big things on the docket now is no more of this January 8th, 9th, 10th football, because it's just getting ridiculous. Gene Smith at Ohio State told me they flew back from their championship games in, what was it, 06 and 07, classes had already begun. They had to leave after the game, like with some sort of road trip, to get back to go to class. So the presidents, I think, are going to put their foot down on that. So when do you play these games? Ideally, you want to play them on weekends and before January 1st, but even that might be impossible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about it now. You're right, because the conference championship games are usually December 4th or 5th, around there.
Yeah.
And then you're talking a couple weeks, maybe a week off, and then a couple semis.
Shorten the regular season.
I know that, but again, and Dennis will probably agree with me, you're going to have a hard time convincing some of these schools to give up a home game when they're selling 80,000 people tickets and everything else.
But that's what they should do.
I know it's what they should do, but it's
it would work this year. I just looked at the calendar. It would probably work this year. The last regular season game or games are December 1st. If you waited 2 weeks and then played the national semifinal and then waited two more weeks, that would still put you at December 28th, all on weekends before January 1st. But then you're sitting there going, okay, why are we even watching the Rose Bowl on January 1st? You know, we've got a national champion before then. You know, that's another thing to think about. How much are these other bowls going to be devalued?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you can't have a national championship before the other games, but how many bowl games? They're going to get eliminated at some point, right? We're not going to have that many bowl games. I know.
No.
Go ahead,
Dennis. Brett McMurphy's written about that.
Right.
There's already a cry to go to 7-5 as an access point. And the reason, I think it would be non-controversial because, you know, yeah, some of these smaller bowls would go out of business, but most everyone, you know, there's 70 bowl teams, almost everyone loses money in the bottom line going to these things. So, you know, you're almost better off not going to a bowl and allowing these teams maybe to practice in December, you know, adding another practice period instead of spring. If coaches are worried about practice, just let them practice in December for a couple of weeks.
Let me ask Dennis this question. I don't know if you can answer this, Dennis, and I don't know if there is a right answer. When did college football get out of hand? When did it completely become a disaster? Because to me, I look at stuff as being a disaster where there's just too many bowl games, and it just all became about money and everything. I'm trying to think of what, when did that happen? Was it the beginning of the BCS or was
the NCAA was formed because of the violence in the game and the graft. You had these ringers being purchased to play in games, playing under the banner of colleges. So in terms of that, I mean, it's really never ended. I mean, the NCAA had to establish an enforcement staff in the early 50s because there was so much cheating. But, I mean, in terms of what you're talking about and kind of this modern age, I think that a lot of us have ourselves to blame because what the BCS did was put focus on how much we love the game. As much as it's criticized, there was that rush. There was that season-long going after that one versus two game, and it put so much interest on the game. It focused for the networks how much fan interest there was, and then you saw the rights fees just blow out of the water because people realized what, and I say this all the time, it's very simple, it's the same reason why reality programming succeeded. People want to see a live event where they don't know the outcome, and sports is the ultimate reality show. And from then, I would say in the last 14 years when the BCS started, that college football has now become the second most popular sport in the country. And that invites all kinds of corruption when you think about it.
Well, we are going to move around to some other stories around the nation here. And you can follow us on Twitter at Dennis Dodd CBS, at J Darren CFB, JDARINCFB, and at Adam Azer, AIZER. We have a question from Nate Watson on Twitter for Dennis. Considering Navy is joining the Big East in 2015, independents are an endangered species. Is this good or bad for college football?
Yeah, that's a good point. For college football, I think the question is, is it good for the teams that are still independent? And you've got Army and Notre Dame now with basically Navy joining and BYU. It's bad for Notre Dame because they've ceased to be competitive on a championship level, but they want to maintain their uniqueness, BYU as well. I don't think it has much of an effect on college football because teams like Notre Dame, Army, and BYU aren't factors right now. I mean, you know, is it somebody to put on the schedule? Absolutely, but I think it hurts those programs more than it impacts college football at all. It is a dying breed, and I do think someday, probably soon, that Notre Dame's probably going to have to give that up and join a conference. And if that happens, then there'll be no reason to have independence.
If they join a conference, are they still going to have their athletic director as part of the BCS board? or would he lose his powers?
Well, it's
ridiculous.
No.
I mean, the way it's set up right now, to read this quote from Bill Hancock, the executive director of the BCS, where he says, "The tricky part is our 11 conference commissioners and the Notre Dame AD may have 12 different opinions about the direction we should go over the next 6 to 8 months." I don't think anybody other than maybe Notre Dame fans thinks that this is a fair setup where Notre Dame's athletic director has an influence like the other, like the conference commissioners.
No, but this has been a problem with Notre Dame all along. They have their own set of rules when it comes to the BCS. Everybody else has to follow this format, and then it's like the Notre Dame special exemption. Well, you know what? Navy's an independent. They don't have that exemption.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's a joke.
Well, they're not an independent for much longer.
No, but you know what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to rationalize them having a spot at the table in the BCS. Now, in terms of TV, the networks want them to be in there. They want to have access to Notre Dame, but Notre Dame has to get access to the system, and they haven't lately. I mean, the way things are going now, they're going to be wishing for the good old days of Charlie Weiss pretty soon because he was the last coach to get into a BCS.
So let's talk about the Miami Hurricanes here. Right now on our website, we have a Q&A with Al Golden and our rapid reporter for the Hurricanes, Brian London, but also the news coming out today. In the Miami Herald, an article about Nevin Shapiro. We love Nevin Shapiro. He's coming back.
Yep.
He says, quote, "I'm taking that program down to Chinatown and the former players and links to that program. Why? Because the U.S. government lined up 47 former players to testify against me in open court if I went to trial. That in itself is motivation to shove it up their collective bleeps." What a wonderful guy, Darst.
He is, you know, he gave all this money to the school and everything, and then, you know, he got in a little trouble, so now he's just going to take the whole athletic program.
I thought he already did that.
I guess you got to do it some more, I guess. I mean, his
how much worse can it get? And by the way, the term "take him down to Chinatown."
Yeah, right.
I haven't heard that in a while.
This guy.
I love that.
Very childish. But I think one of the important things from that Miami Herald article was it said that one UM official said he expects, quote, one more bowl ban, maybe two at most, end quote.
Yeah.
And some undetermined scholarship losses. I guess what I want to know, Dennis, based on – do we know enough now to determine what's fair in the Miami case?
Yeah, I think we do because don't forget, when that Yahoo story came out, which was late August, mid to late August, the NCAA had been in there since March. So many of the facts, I think, that came out are really indisputable, that it was wide-ranging, it was over a period of years. They're probably going to get lack of institutional control. But there are other things since then that are at work here. Don't forget that Mark Emmert, the NCAA president, has said on a couple of occasions, Miami is doing exemplary work in the investigation. They've been incredibly cooperative in this. Well, if you're going to say that and then drop the hammer on them, what are we talking about here? And also, you've got this new penalty structure, which looks like it's going to take effect pretty soon, which would have, had it been in place, would have had USC fined millions of dollars. They would have got even more bowl bans and more scholarships. So where does Miami fit in all that? I mean, I'm like you, Doris. What else more can he do? I mean, the NCAA is probably sitting there going, "Nah, we're good. You know, we got our case built." You know.
But the NCAA can't use all of his information. That's why I think Miami might get off easy here, because they can't subpoena the former players. Nobody's going to talk against the Hurricanes, and if they do want to go against the coaches involved, none of those guys are at Miami anymore.
But you forgot something, Adam. they've already gotten. Remember my story on limited immunity?
Yeah, it's true. Yes.
They've got a bunch of players that drop a dime on the old Hurricanes in exchange for their eligibility. One of them being the Purdue for you. You remember
Robert Marv?
Robert Marv at Purdue
never stops giving to the Hurricanes.
they've got enough. And don't forget. And the other thing is, I recall Shapiro had paperwork to back up everything he said.
Yeah,
this isn't going to end well.
I mean, he was pulling out boxes of records while in prison in New Jersey going, here's this and this and this with guys' names on it. I don't think it matters if they can't subpoena players.
I think they're going to get penalized. I have a feeling. My guess is when the penalties come out, we're going to say, wow, that wasn't quite as bad as I thought it would be.
Well, they took the bowl ban this year. They'll probably get another one next year, and who cares? They're a 6-6 team anyway.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, note to Ohio State, when you're 6-6, that's when you take the bowl ban.
Right.
That's the
genius
move.
Well, here's the bigger question. Can Miami, you know, without the program crumbling, can they can they ride out something like this? And I think they can. I think they are like Ohio State and USC, where they can be back real quick after going through something like this.
It's possible. Yeah. They got to keep Al Golden there, I think. Let's talk about Ohio State. You wrote about them not too long ago, last week. We, as a staff, our staff writers named the best coaching hires from the offseason. Unbelievable how many there were, 26. And number one, of course, was Urban Meyer. That's kind of hard to dispute. He's done a great job recruiting. So instead of really going in depth on that story, I did want to mention the Gene Smith angle, the athletic director there. Why does he still have a job, and how long is that going to last?
Well, I think you raise a great point. I was sitting there thinking about that, going, what world are they living in when they're sitting there going, we were punished unfairly because of a precedent-setting bowl ban. I mean, we were sitting there going, you know, they're going to get bonged with close to the death penalty or lack of institutional control. I think they were lucky to get what they have. And overseeing all of it, the man who didn't take the bowl ban in 2011, Gene Smith, is still there. I think he's going to ride it out. I think he's been quoted other places publicly saying he's confident about his job. I mean, that question is really for the board of trustees and now the board of directors at Ohio State. Because Gordon Gee, I don't think, is in a position to do anything. I mean, he's as complicit in this as anyone else for the things he said. You know, if you want to criticize somebody, criticize the trustees and the board of directors. It doesn't look like they're going to do anything.
Yeah. Darst, the Big Ten coaches didn't like Urban Meyer's recruiting practices. They are A, completely justified, or B, big, whiny, stupid babies.
Listen,
I think they're going to be.
Is this C?
It's somewhat big. What big whiny babies? Just listen. It's just one again. Urban Meyer's. Here's a guy who was in the SEC, won two national championships to Florida. He comes to the Big Ten and you know has a great recruiting class. People are going to be upset. If he had a bad recruiting class, nobody would care.
I know, but he still recruits. That was the
I
thing.
Know, but I'm just saying. You know, that's the way it goes.
Wait. Define stealing recruits.
Yeah, I mean, it's
he broke into their houses, no. Put a bag under them.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, isn't that part of recruiting?
In the SEC, it is. I guess not in the Big Ten.
Adam, you've been corrupted by words like commitment, solid verbal, slight lean. These terms have been foisted upon us to be some sort of sacred bond that's not meant to be broken. Look, you know what Urban Meyer did in his recruiting time at Ohio State, they call Tuesday in the SEC. Okay, that's a basic day in the SEC, and the strong survive, and the rest are named Vanderbilt in that league. So they better get used to it. And yeah, they are a bunch of whiny babies because after saying you know dropping the words like illegal and unethical, then as soon as it comes out that they're referring to Urban Meyer, they're hitting the airwaves with the statements. Oh, I never meant him
right.
In particular. It's like, come on, at least you're going to say that man up. You're not talking about the Northwestern coach when you're saying unethical. That's what I hated about it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know why they shied away from it so quickly. But
they're worried about now. They're worried about payback, and it's going to be ugly.
That Devin Shapiro ugly. They're going down to Chinatown. Now, we have one more Big Ten story. We're going to end it on a positive note. I wanted Darce to sing this song, but he wouldn't do it.
I don't know the song. I don't know the lyrics that well.
Next time, karaoke.
Okay.
This is a song by Pat Stansik. It's performed by Mind's Eyes, which is an Ann Arbor band. It is a song. I'm not going to play it, but you can check it out on the website, cbsports.com/collegefootball. Check out the blog. A song written about Denard Robinson. I asked you to find your favorite lyric. Did you find it?
I have two.
Oh, okay.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
I love you, Denard, and I don't know how to show it. I used to be scared every time you throw
That's
it.
That's the one I like.
Right,
too,
that was my, and then my other one, and then my other favorite one is, under the lights, my heart still races because of you. I don't mind tripping over laces.
Yeah,
this guy. It's very creative. I know it's kind of cheesy, but it's a very creative song about Denard Robinson.
It's a little too heartfelt for me. Like he's too into it, but I do like. He says. When you took your first snap versus Western Michigan, that's when we found out that you were made of dilithium. Always my favorite, even when Tate started, now the whole campus gets denarded. Dennis, you got to check this one out.
Well, I don't think they're going to have to worry about Mr. Robinson that much longer. It's tough because Brady Hoke and Al Borges, who's the offensive coordinator, are trying to win with a guy that is just completely the opposite of what they need for their offense. I mean, they want to run a pro-style guy under center, drop-back passer. They've got this guy who on one play might make a fantastic run. The next play might throw it, you know, in a linebacker's hands 5 yards down the field, and that's what drives them crazy. I saw that firsthand in the Sugar Bowl. I really think they'd be better off going with Devin Gardner and putting Robinson at a slot receiver, I really do, because it just doesn't further what they want to do there.
No, but the big problem I have with them, and again, if that's what they want to go with and they want to go with Gardner, then put him in. This whole nonsense about having Robinson lead them down to the 7-yard line and then pulling him out of the game and putting Gardner in is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Right,
Quit bouncing back and forth and stick with a quarterback.
I'm just not sure that Gardner is the answer.
He's probably not, but again, like Dennis said, if he wants to be a pro, if they're pro style, then that's what they got to go with. But still, you can't take Denard off the field. Come on, he's exciting. Is it correct to say he's a poor man's Robert Griffin? Real poor man's Robert?
Yeah, in the slums, poor. Robert Griffin makes good decisions. This guy is.
No, I know. His passing
place.
Is not good.
No, but when you call them Mr. Robinson, I got me thinking there's got to be a Simon and Garfunkel. Parody.
If there's anything on you, if there's out there, it's on.
I think
YouTube, right?
I actually think I've seen it. Now that I believe somebody did that at like a Michigan student concert or something. Here's to you, Denard Robinson. All right, Dennis, thanks a lot for coming on. We appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, stay out of New Jersey prison, guys,
and stay out of the Jersey Shore as well. College football,
that's
the
right.
Reality show. That's Dennis Dodd, J. Darren Darst. I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to y'all later.
Later.